This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Mark Stein coming up next segment. This segment is open. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. As you might imagine, lots of reaction to Marcus Howard. Kirby in the 402 tweets, Jim is a Creighton grad and a huge Blue Jays basketball fan. I generally disliked Marcus Howard until this interview today. Sounds like a great kid. Hey, look, I'm not going to tell you who to root for or how to feel, but that's an impossible person to dislike, right? I was thinking about that. Not only did he come off well, not only was that an impressive interview, I would be hard-pressed to find a professional who comes off that well on this program as he just did. That's a college athlete. It was amazing. Dan in Milltown tweets, Marcus Howard, class act. Great interview, Jimmy. Bella B is in on Twitter. Marcus sounds like a very impressive young man. Good luck to him. Now, Marcus does not sound like a very impressive young man. Marcus is a really impressive young man. Could have turned pro, came back. I love the way he talked about his family. I love the way he talked about everything. And it was always about those around him, always about being a servant, always about his teammates and the program and the school and the teachers and everything else. But I love the way he talked about his brother. Like, I've learned more from him than anybody. I'm more proud of him than I could be anybody. Really nice. Stucknuts in. Great Antetokounmpo rhyme. Signed, that kook that tried to rhyme farmer with karma. Aaron in Canton.
I've got a Rick Astley reset for you. It's in finest clone fashion.
Do it.
All right, man. Never gonna Rick roll Rome. Always gonna be a clone. I will call the jungle home for the karma. I like give me back my fat. I think Lyle Grant's all that. Or Jay Stu in a movie as a farmer. Never gonna Rick, never gonna Rick, never gonna
Rick. Man, that was horrible. 2009, he tried to rhyme farmer and karma. Got him into the hack-off, though. It did earn him a spot in the hack-off. Monday is an ATP day. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Submit a question. I will answer one of them later on. And in the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. And one more email. Dear Jim, I would have had a better showing at my tournament. However, I was constantly being thrown off by these two toddlers screaming in the crowd and the father of those kids being constantly berated by who I assume is this dude's wife and mother of the kids. Sincerely, Tiger Woods. Wore anyone under the age of 25 at a golf tournament. Wore Hawk being tied down and duct taped to the basement. Call him next Valentine's Day. Again, I do not know how that went for him. I got touch base.
Not in my swing.
Dear Jim, did you bet all of that dollar that you had left in your account? Signed, Joe from Jessup. It's funny you say that. Really funny you say that. I just told James Kelly that I was down to $4. And I just bet three of it. He goes, dude, how do you not bet the last dollar? I said, because I was afraid they might close out the account or something. God forbid. You know, I've got a buck left. Where and how should I use that buck? War bringing back the Mr. Ed page before the Kentucky Derby contest. Hey, Joe, I'd bring it back if it existed. I don't know of any Mr. Ed page.
Thanks, Joe.
1-800-636-8686. All right, so MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred continues to have himself an offseason, and by that I mean a really bad offseason. Nobody was more fired up about the NBA All-Star Game than Rob Manfred, because that meant the heat was off of him for a few hours. Now, you know, he was hoping that people would keep Shaka Khan trending, or that there'd be a serious debate about Kawhi as the first winner of the MVP trophy renamed in honor of Kobe Bryant. You know he wanted all that. Manfred probably has like 15 different burner accounts on Twitter trying to get a debate going about the game ending on free throws. Anything to get that spotlight, that heat, that pressure off of him. Because ever since he released the league's report on the Astros, the pressure itself has not diminished. It's increased, if anything. So much so that he sat down with Carl Ravitch yesterday, and that didn't really help matters either. If anything, it made it even worse. Starting with this answer to the question of why the players involved, pretty much the question everybody wants answered, why are the players involved not being punished?
I understand people's desire to have the players pay a price for what went on here. I think if you watch the players, watch their faces when they have to deal with this issue publicly, they have paid a price. To think that they're skipping down the road into spring training happy, that's just a mischaracterization of where we are.
Wow. Like, if I were ever to bring back the Rat family, that might be a reason. But I'm not. As amazing as that song is, and as amazing as that family was, this guy just said that the players have paid a price. Exactly what price have the players paid? I mean, sure, that press conference with Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve was awkward and tedious.
Awkward.
Then the other players meeting the media in the clubhouse didn't seem to be having all that much fun either. But do you really think that that's going to satisfy fans of opposing teams? Do you think that's going to satisfy the opposing teams themselves? Exactly how does that punishment fit that crime? Hell, exactly what is that punishment that he's talking about? Like, I see how the manager and the general manager were punished, but when Manfred says the players have paid a price, what the hell is he talking about? What price? Do you really think that the fans and the opposing players are going to say that they seem pretty uncomfortable in that five-minute media session? Damn, that must have really stung. The commissioner really brought the hammer down. The commissioner really took a 2x4 to those cheaters. Yep, that's good enough for me. They paid the price. Case closed. Water under the bridge. Let's let bygones be bygones. Let's keep moving. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Yet, the commissioner went on.
Having said that, the desire to have actual discipline imposed on him, I understand it. And in a perfect world, it would have happened. We ended up where we ended up in pursuit of really, I think, the most important goal, and that is getting the facts and getting them out there for people.
But in the future, it might be different.
It could be different, yes.
In other words, look, I'd have loved to have done it, you know, but we don't live in a perfect world. So let's just move on. Yeah, I don't think anybody's moving on, Commissioner. I don't think anybody is moving on except you and Jim Crane. That's not how the fans see this, right? They're going to see the only people who have been punished for the cheating scandal are three managers and a general manager. The players, the guys who benefited the most in terms of winning a World Series and having potentially artificially inflated stats, are getting off easy. And here's where we get to the brass tacks of it. Because Manfred explained that former Astros GM Jeff Luhnow did not communicate to the players about a league-wide memo in 2017 after the Red Sox had been caught. And since he didn't communicate to the players, the commissioner argues, the Players Association would appeal any punishment that came down on the players, and they would therefore win the appeal. Look, I understand what he's saying. But the fact that you couldn't make the discipline stick leads to the perception that the players got over, that they cheated, that they benefited, that they got a ring, and that nothing happened to them. No discipline, no punishment. In fact, it's not even a perception, it's a fact, it's true. At least in the scenario that Manfred describes, if you had handed down an initial punishment to the players, then you make them appeal it, and then if they win the appeal, so be it. But at least you tried. You tried, and you've given the fans the satisfaction that you did try, that it was not okay. And then you get the good PR from trying. And you make the players appeal and fight the nuance of whether or not they knew that banging on trash cans was cheating or not. Put it on them. Put it on the players. Make them argue that they didn't cheat. And then if you lose the grievance, you still want some goodwill because you tried to hold the cheaters accountable. Except that's not what he did, which is why the fans are so pissed, which is why opposing players are so pissed. Like, here's the thing. Manfred obviously thought there was no way any of the players, the Astro players, would say anything or roll on anybody unless they were guaranteed immunity. And they weren't going to be able to do an investigation without getting the players who cheated to talk. So they made a decision that an investigation with no punishment was better than an investigation with no content. All right, so I get that. But you can't expect the fans or the opposition to be happy about that, because they're not and they won't be for a long time. And then there's one more thing. There's this notion of stripping the team of its title. Manfred said, it's a big topic, or it was a big topic, among MLB's senior staff, but he added,
it has never happened in baseball. You know, and I am a believer in the idea that precedent matters, and that when you deviate from it, you have to have a really good reason to do that, number one. Number two, I thought the report gave people a really transparent account of what went on, that we put people in a position to make their own judgments about the behavior that went on. That certainly has happened over the last month. The idea of, you know, an asterisk or asking for a piece of metal back seems, you know, sort of a futile act. People are always know that there was something about the 2017 World Series that was different, and they're going to know that because whether we made every decision right or wrong, we undertook a really thorough investigation, and we had the intestinal fortitude to put out there the facts we found, even though they weren't very pretty.
Keep digging, man. Keep digging. I love how he gave himself credit at the end of that for having the intestinal fortitude to put that out there. Man, there's a whole hell of a lot in that answer, and none of it's good. Saying that no team has ever been stripped of a title before, and therefore you better have a good reason to do something that has never happened before, is a pretty weird way of arguing that a large, coordinated cheating scandal is not a good reason to strip a team of its title. His thing is, man, you better have a good reason if you do something that has never been done before. Yeah, well, that's a pretty good reason, don't you think? What a terrible argument. Because even though I said from the outset that Major League Baseball was not going to strip the Astros of the World Series, what is the precedent? The precedent now is you can have a coordinated cheating scandal that rips at the integrity of the game and you still get to keep, quote, that piece of metal. If you can't or you won't punish the players, if you rip the title, that probably would go a long way to making fans and opposing players feel like something was done they didn't get over and a price was paid. And one more thought before I go to break. Do not come in here and celebrate your guts for releasing that report. That's your job. That doesn't take, quote, intestinal fortitude. Man, that's going to work and doing your job. That said, there is not a precedent for this. Yeah, well, unfortunately, there is, though, right? The precedent in baseball is, and there is a precedent. The precedent is guys cheat and guys get away with it. Cheaters don't get stripped of records or numbers or contracts. Hell, Barry Bonds allegedly cheated his way to his records. So did Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and just about everybody else who played in that era. So now the real problem for baseball is this. Cheating works. Cheating pays. In fact, cheaters really aren't paid much of a price over the years at all. If anything, they get rewarded with bigger contracts. I've got another angle that I want to get to. And that's the fact that if these guys don't pay a price, Major League Baseball, the opposition, their peers, of course, will police their own and take matters into their own hands, which is why Dusty Baker is trying to get in front of this and saying, you better not have guys come headhunting on us. I want to get to that, too, a little bit later on. Your thoughts on that? And the commissioner, what he had to say. Mark Stein's coming up next. Guys, never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Like, you may think that it makes you look casual, but more than likely, you look like a slob. It's just sloppy. This is why Untuck It makes shirts that are specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long, it's not too short, it is just right. Shirts designed so well that GQ actually has called them perfection. And they are. UNTUCKit shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. Not only do they look good, they feel amazing. Even the wrinkle-free options. UNTUCKit offers 50 different fit combinations, so tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can experience the perfect fitting shirt. All you have to do is log on to UNTUCKit.com, check out all the new arrivals. Some really good stuff there. Use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your entire first-time purchase. You can also go to any of their 80 retail locations nationwide. Stop hiding your shirt, Alvin, with your pants. Stop hiding your pants with your shirt. UNTUCKit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Just be sure to use the promo code ROME and get 20% savings off your first-time purchase.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It's a good day. It's a good show. Moving quickly. Coming up next hour, the head basketball coach of Florida State, Leonard Hamilton. Right now, though, we talk some pro ball. We are joined by somebody who covers the NBA for the New York Times, the man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. He went to Cal State Fullerton. He's been recognized as a Big West Conference legend, a friend of the program, the recipient of the 2019 Kurt Gowdy Media Award. He is Mark Stein. Hey, Mark, what's up? How are you?
Romy, I'm good.
Mark, like, what I really want to do is start our conversation by talking Blackberries, and then we could probably spend the entire time talking phones, but I should do the responsible thing and start by talking about the All-Star Game and the All-Star Weekend, so let me do that. When the league first announced, Mark, what they were going to do for the fourth quarter and the new format, what was your initial reaction?
Probably eye-rolling like everybody else. You know, the league has tried a lot of things, innovations of various types. They never seem to achieve the desired effect. So it wasn't just me. I don't think anybody had any grand expectations. Certainly nobody was saying it beforehand. So what we saw in that fourth quarter was completely organic and most welcome, because it's the heaviest time that I've ever seen in the league, and this is my 27th season covering it.
Mark Stein joining us. I want to get into that in a moment. But did you ever think that you would see an All-Star game where you would see guys diving for loose balls and taking charges?
It was awesome. I mean, Chris Paul and Lowry, they basically bumped Luka Doncic and Trae Young out of the game on seniority. You know, Doncic and Trae were the starters. Typically in an All-Star game, the guys who get to start get to finish. The young kids were told, sit on the bench over there. And Chris Paul would never come out. Lowry took multiple charges. Don't forget, there was no clock in the fourth quarter. It was an untimed thing. It went for 40 minutes, and we saw very little substituting, and we saw zero load management. Kawhi Leonard, pretty much, you know, he said it. He made his first two shots, and from there went all out trying to win the MVP. I mean, none of that was scripted.
Mark Stein's joining us. You have all that, Mark, and then you mentioned that this is about as heavy a time as the league has ever experienced. Using 24 as the target number for the fourth quarter was one of a number of tributes to Kobe and Gigi Bryant over the weekend. How would you describe the feel and the vibe of the entire weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you can't turn a corner or have a conversation, really, without Kobe coming into it in this point, and that's understandable. This has just frankly never happened. A player of his stature, at his age, just a few years out of the game, the manner in which his life was claimed, this is all uncharted territory. And, you know, this is always a celebratory, it's like a convention, really. The game has always been almost, you know, the afterthought. I mean, it's just day after day of events and meetings and basically the whole league coming together. So the whole league comes together just a few weeks after the biggest tragedy it's ever witnessed. And, I mean, you can imagine that Kobe's presence, it's everywhere.
Mark Stein joining us. You know, Mark, I've interviewed a number of different athletes in different sports since that tragedy. It's not just basketball. It's amazing the impact that Kobe had on athletes in every kind of sport. You did a piece recently on Luka, and you talked to him about Kobe Bryant. There's this legendary moment in late December when he was getting ready to inbound the ball, and Kobe started talking trash to him, but he did so in Slovenian. What did Luka share with you about that moment?
Yes, and he says it's going to stay with him for the rest of his life, and you can understand it because, it was the last game Kobe and Gianna attended. They were right there at courtside. Watching Luka was, I think, a big part of the reason why they were there that night. And, you know, so the story I wrote going into Sunday was kind of, A, exploring the backstory of, you know, it was never really explained how Kobe even learned any Slovenian. And, of course, Saša Vujačić was his longtime former teammate and sparring partner in practice, and those two are really close. And it was actually Sasha who told me that Kobe being Kobe, he would hear Vujicic just uncork these Slovenian and Serbian curse words, and of course Kobe wanted to learn them all and master them, and why'd you use that, and break it all down like he's looking at tape. So it was actually Sasha Vujicic who was his Slovenian tutor. And I mean, Luka was stunned, and you saw the pictures they took after the game, and just I think as much as anything that's happened in his career, that night sticks with him, and he carries that for sure.
We're talking to Mark Stein. I would encourage anybody who has not seen that piece to go find it and read it. It's a great piece. One more thought about that, Mark. He's not going to turn 21 until February 28th. How do you explain the fact that he's doing all the things that he's doing as quickly as he is on this level?
Basically, European basketball is a lot better at the highest level than a lot of people thought. I mean, he was playing in the Real Madrid first team at the age of 16, and by 18, he was leading his little country of 2 million people to a Eurobasket title and then leading Real Madrid to a EuroLeague championship, and those honors don't necessarily resonate among NBA fandom, but that's a really high level. He was playing with men, and he's more NBA ready than anybody thought, and that includes the Mavs. You know, the Mavericks are not going to sit here and tell you, yes, we knew this guy was going to be as good as he is. I mean, he's averaging 29-9-9. Obviously, numbers are somewhat inflated in today's NBA, given the faster pace and more possessions, but 29-9-9 looks good no matter what the circumstances. So, Luka believed he was going to be this kind of force, but to happen this fast, I think a lot of people around the league just underestimated how NBA ready this guy was.
Mark Stein joins us for a few more moments. That's important stuff, Mark. Now, I literally could do an entire interview. I could do a whole hour on this topic. You've got a great piece in your newsletter about NBA executives who still use BlackBerry phones. It's important to note, these are not just hacks that are doing it, or assistants, or interns. These are four of the best executives in the NBA. Masai Ujiri and I have talked about his love of the BlackBerry in the past. Who are the other confirmed members of this extremely elite fraternity?
You got Sam Presti. You have Gerson Rosa, who just made multiple trades. And Daryl Morey, of course, in Houston. And, so at least four of the 30 decision-makers in the league are still using my favorite phone. I didn't know you were as devoted a fan, so that brings yet another thing that we have in common, which I love to hear.
I still
use mine. I will never, ever give it up. I still write the first draft, at least, and sometimes whole stories on it. And, the NBA has its own little small but fiercely loyal community. Throw Derrick Rose in there as a player. Throw Jamal Crawford in there as a player.
Jamal Crawford is great. That does not surprise me at all. Now, when you talk, you have your own reasons, Mark. Maybe they're the same as the executives. But we're talking about high-powered guys into the trade deadline who are doing business on BlackBerries. When you talk to them, what is their argument for still using a BlackBerry?
It's always the keyboard. There is nothing in the smart, but I don't care what kind of app they put on the phone. I don't care how fancy they get, picture taking, video, whatever. Nothing can compare or replace the physical keyboard. And, these four executives in particular still feel the same way as I do. And It's interesting. Rosas made four trades in a span of about 40 days. He estimated for me that 35% of the business he conducts is on his BlackBerry. Obviously, there's still a lot of conversation that has to happen phone to phone and human to human, but it's pretty staggering.
There's so much to get to about this too, Mark, before I let you go, but I wonder how much pressure do these guys feel? How much pressure do you feel when you're the one guy in the group who's got green and your bubbles do not show up?
I feel none. I'm not apologizing ever.
Like, I love it.
I'm not giving up my keyboard. I don't care what scorn is coming my way.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. So, like Masai said, and I, in fact, there was a point in time when he came on the show and he admitted to me that he had gotten away from the BlackBerry. There's a lot of pressure to switch to a different device. I know some guys have a BlackBerry and they go with another phone. That's not unusual. Do any of these guys have the courage to only go with a BlackBerry?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think Presti may be a BlackBerry-only guy. But I really shouldn't even say that because I'm not sure. And look, I got to put my hand up. I'm talking to you right now on an iPhone. I have an iPhone as my second phone. Obviously, iPhones are amazing, and they do lots of things that a BlackBerry can't, and you need all those things in your life. But if I had to go down to one right now, I would have to throw this iPhone in the trash, and I can't not have a BlackBerry.
Hey Mark, which BlackBerry, the Key 1, or which one are you using?
Yeah, I'm using the Key 2, which is the newest one. And
right,
kind of the whole reason I wrote about this was because right before the trade deadline came an announcement that BlackBerry phones, which since 2016 have been made in China, BlackBerry has stopped making phones itself. BlackBerry announced right before the deadline that's going away too. So as of August, there will be nobody making BlackBerry phones. So what's amusing about these NBA executives, and the Rockets really kind of started this, they have like, they keep a stash of backup devices because they're going extinct, man. It's sad. They're going extinct.
You know, I would say to you that I'd be freaking out if I knew that they were not going to make the device, the hardware anymore, and then you dropped your phone. Like, you can go on eBay. There's a million BlackBerries. You can always find them. But that would be a concern, right? Like, all of a sudden, they're not going to be in production anymore. Then what do these guys do?
Well, true BlackBerry insiders, like, you know, I wouldn't call myself a super expert on this part of it, but people still hold out hope that someone will come in with a new licensing agreement to find somebody in China or another country to keep manufacturing them. So I think all we can do is, if you love this phone, cross your fingers and hope it happens.
Mark, one last thought. The thing that I thought, and I kind of got beyond it, I was one of those guys who was addicted to the CrackBerry. I thought that what I would never get over was that physical keyboard. I did. The thing I really struggled with, the detox, was the indicator light, the flashing red indicator light. I didn't think there was any way I could live without that, and I also thought there was no way to live without the BBMs. All three things were really important, but somehow, man, if you fight that addiction, you can get over it. There is a way. I love the phone. I love what it represents, but I can't lie to you. I'm not using one right now.
No, you got to go back and get one. You should do your... Just, I mean, middle of the night, something pops in your head for your show rundown. You just bang it into your phone. You need it, man. You need
I'm
it on the nightstand. It's like a comedian who thinks of a joke in the middle of the night. What if you have to write 10 paragraphs in the middle of the night? You don't want to do that on an iPhone.
Do you get up and write 10 paragraphs in the middle of the night?
I'm a.
You're a writer.
I got issues.
You're a Kurt Gowdy Media Award recipient. Maybe you do. Okay, I'll tell you what. If I get the Key 1, I've already done some research on this, Mark, and it's going to cost. If I do get the Key 1, I'm going to get the red version. The red's badass.
Expensive.
It's really expensive. I agree.
Stick it to the network. Show cost.
Yeah, they're not paying for it. They will not do that. Mark Stein covers the NBA for the New York Times, and you would not know about this if you did not see his NBA newsletter, the man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. Fight the good fight. Mark, nice job. Great to have you back.
Always good to be with you, pal. Be
you
good.
Too, man. Have a great day. I love it. Yeah, and that, I think about it a lot. I sometimes go back and forth. The last athlete that I saw in person with a BlackBerry, the last athlete that I saw in person holding onto a BlackBerry at the valet stand at a hotel waiting for his car was none other than Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett had a silver passport BlackBerry, And, you know, if I didn't know Martellus Bennett and I didn't have a job to do, I would have said, dude, can I have your autograph? And not because you're an NFLer, but because you're still using a BlackBerry. And not a BlackBerry, but that funky Passport BlackBerry. That was a really funky device. It looks like a passport. And the thinking was, yeah, you know, you just carry your passport around like your phone too. Bad idea. Bad design, bad form factor. But my man was not giving it up. And one more thought, I know I'm really heavy. That whole thing, but I can't live without the keyboard. Once you live without that keyboard, try to go back to that keyboard. It's the weirdest thing ever. People are like, oh, I can type so much faster on the keyboard. Not if you don't have it, you can't. If you have an iPhone right now, go find a BlackBerry and try and type on one of those keyboards. It's impossible. That said, I do get nostalgic. I do get reminiscent. Mark Stein's got me fired up. I might do it. When we come back, I will open it up to you. Is there anybody listening right now that still rocks a BlackBerry? Is there anybody who emails this show with a BlackBerry? Prove it. Leonard Hamilton, top of the hour. Telephone call is next.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tuesday night, 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. Number 6, Dayton, heads to VCU to battle the Rams in an A-10 showdown. It's only on CBS Sports Network. Good matchup. I'm still laughing at Mark Stein. Man, he is so loyal. He is loyal as hell to BlackBerries. But then again, people who still use BlackBerry are. It's like a cult. And what's amazing is it almost turned overnight. That was a phone that at one point it seemed like 99% of the world used. And then all of a sudden, iPhones came into play, other phones, and then there was nothing. Or next to nothing. And I was one of those guys. I used to be a big, big phone degenerate. And I stopped playing that game. Because the more I used all of my Macs and Apple, the more I got stuck in that ecosystem. I just can't go back and forth between operating systems. It's not even about the keyboard, right? Like I say, it's hard to go back to a physical keyboard. And I don't want to trade display real estate for an extended keyboard. It's not that important to me. I'd rather have the screen. I'd rather have the display. I don't want to have a smaller display because of a physical keyboard that I don't need anyway. Like my feeling is, if the argument is, man, I love typing on that thing. I type a lot. If you have so much to type on your phone, don't you pick up your phone and talk to somebody. I know people don't do that anymore. But that'd be my thing. But the other thing is, I don't like going back and forth between the operating systems. I mean, I guess if I went 50-50 or 60-40 and I spent enough time in a different operating system than iOS, it wouldn't bother me, but it does. Except he's not giving it up, which I respect. Hey, Rome, BlackBerry was my favorite phone ever, right behind my flip phone. The phones used to fit in your pocket. Now I feel like I'm carrying around an iPad in my pants. Jim in Chicago, I see you working. Not only that, but if you throw a bulky cover on it, you're really not putting that phone in your pocket. Dear Jim, war bums using empty cigarette boxes as BlackBerries. Nick in Westchester running the marathon with Hawk. Here you go. Okay, this guy, I said, is there anybody who emails this program with a BlackBerry? Key 2, checking in. We'll be looking for one to stash in light of the cut in production. Fred in Gulf Breeze sent from my BlackBerry. I mean, he might have worked that thing up. That might be a scam, but I tend to believe him. I like it. Hey, Rome, I don't know why everybody's giving Manfred such a hard time about the punishments he handed down to the Astros. We think they were fair punishments. Signed, kids that get sent to their rooms filled with video games as punishment. John in Huntington Beach. We're Ira Craig using a dried out cob of eaten corn as a pumice stone. That's like my kid. I'll see Logan. I'm like, man, get off the PS4. Get off that thing. Dad, get off that thing. All right. Goes into his office and goes right to his other device. Goes to the iPad, goes to the phone, whatever. Jaime, I think it's pretty awesome that this merry band of cheaters is now managed by Toothpick Man, who presided over the biggest cheat the game has ever seen in Baroid. It's so good you can't make this stuff up. Steven S.A., you got a point. You do have a point. It's actually going to be a good thing because there was a lot written and said over the weekend about how the Astros are going to have to deal with so much hate everywhere they go, so much heat everywhere they go, that there are a lot of questions as to whether or not they're going to be able to handle that. Like, baseball is a tough enough game as it is without knowing that anytime you go on the road, there's somebody, well, 30, 35, 40,000 people waiting to hate on you. The one guy who dealt with that as well as anybody was Baroid. I've never seen a guy compartmentalize better than Barry Bonds. Every time that guy went to the yard, there were people waiting to scream at him and hate on him. People throwing syringes at him. It didn't matter. This guy could lock in. He could always lock right in. Let's go to West Hollywood. Andy. Andy, what's going on?
Hey, Jim, I still have my BlackBerry Curve. It's been 10 years.
Oh, dude, that is so cool. Does it have that little trackball in the middle of it?
Oh, God, yeah. And it's the best pictures I've taken for the last, I guess, 10 years because as a Vietnam veteran, I go to a lot of Vietnam veterans events, and I'm just able to take a lot of pictures and transfer them to other friends who still have BlackBerry. I'm 68 years old. I'm old school, and I still know a lot of people who still have it. It just means the world to me because I have a lot of personal pictures that I took with Obama and Hillary Clinton and a lot of veterans events. It's the best.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I really respect that, Andy. Nice job. Rack him. Save that phone call. Andy, thank you for your service. Welcome home. Thank you for your service and welcome home. That's a Vietnam vet who says, oh, no, I love that phone. I have it. I've got pictures on it. There's a lot of other vets who have them as well. I never made that connection. The BlackBerry Curve. That phone was great. I loved it. Except that little trackball. I can't remember if the Curve had the trackball or the pad. That little trackball that would get all nasty, get a bunch of dust in there, and then it would stick. Good phone, though, man. Easy to put in your pocket. The only problem with those phones is the display is like an inch. It's a tiny display. But he said the pictures are great, and it's the way I transfer pictures. At Hitman Canadian tweets, BlackBerry, iPhone, please. Morse code never runs out of batteries. Wore dots and dashes. Sincerely, Garrett Ritt. It's lit. Pony Express didn't want any of that. I did ask Martellus Bennett in an interview on my Showtime show about his use of a BlackBerry.
Martellus Bennett, one of the most artistic, interesting athletes alive, still uses a BlackBerry.
Yeah, I just got the BlackBerry Passport, the new one that just came out. It's a niche market. I love the BlackBerry. I just think smartphones actually make people dumb. I think, first of all, the government don't want BlackBerries. It's a conspiracy. The government doesn't want people to have BlackBerries because they're the hardest to track because you can encrypt everything on it. So they don't want people to have BlackBerries. With them smartphones, I can find you right now. I just log on. I can track you anywhere you go. They're keeping tabs on us, man. You got to watch the government.
Damn, I forgot about that conversation. Now he's in my head. He's like, because of the encryption, the government cannot keep tabs on you. He said, I could track any of you right now on your smartphones. You can't find me. I'm on a BlackBerry. Bennett. I wonder. That was in 2014. I wonder if Martellus is still on a BlackBerry. Somebody find that out for me. I wonder. Dear Jim, Manfred is making the 2017 World Series a total joke. No one is owning squat. The interviews are a joke. They fired the manager and the GM. Why? All the players from that roster should not be considered for the Hall of Fame. I think it's gotten to a point that nobody wants to hear any more about this until they bring in the guillotine and they roll some heads. Tony and Richmond, there's something to that. This is what I'm saying. This is why they're going to encounter so much hate this year, because there was no price to be paid. There was no punishment. There was no discipline for the players involved. And Manfred's argument is, yeah, that's because the Players Association would have appealed and we would have had no chance to win. And furthermore, there'd be no investigation without the cooperation of the players, and the players were not going to cooperate unless we promised them that nothing would happen to them. Oh, so where'd that get you, Commissioner? How'd that go for you? got the opposition talking about how they're going to dot those guys. You've got the fans who are miserable, lying in wait for those guys. It's going to go really badly. Leonard Hamilton joins me.